Session number 12099, Mr. Harry Marsh, Reel 2.
Harry Marsh, Reel 2.
Yeah, well, he was an ambitious young man. He wanted to be a corporal, I think, and he pushed us. My golly, we had to work and work and work, I might tell you. We didn't have a lot of time. That's what really made me feel that I could remuster. I was still in Group 1, which is the highest paid, but a fitter general had general duties, but it's different a fitter DP, which I wanted to be.
What's DP?
Well, it was a fit driver petrol, really, when I got on transport, which I wanted to be on, you see. And when I went to 4th Squadron, I didn't get on the transport, but they just put me on general duties, you know, filling up the aeroplanes and, you know, general work like that, you know. And so I really didn't get into the workshops at all during the First World War. Well, they had older men and more qualified and all the rest of it, you know. They had the headquarters doing the work, most of the work they packed up and sent away to Pont-à-Large. It was any big, if an aeroplane had done its time, it went to Pont-à-Large, which was the headquarters of the repair centre. They do this, like this war was the same. If an engine had done its time, it was leaking oil or something, I used to pack it up and send it to somewhere in East Anglia somewhere, you know, and then order a new engine and that was it.
These general duties, would they be on planes that were going on
reconnaissance? Oh yes, I was in one flight, you see, I think it was about six engines, and general duties was, you know, as I say, wheeling the kites out and filling them up with petrol and oil and, you know, that sort of caper, you know. And starting, of course, which is important because you wanted two or three, to pull the propeller out to suck in. And then the fellow said contact, and of course it was away with a bit of luck.
Yes.
I mean, no such thing as a self-starter or something like that. No parachutes, you know.
What kind of, were there protection, any protection for the pilots? On
no, no protection whatsoever. All they had in the back seat for the observer was a machine gun on a swirling effort, you know, swirling round. You could turn it round all day angle of 40, well, 90 degrees, really. And that was his only protection if anybody got on his tail. Of course, this war they had a tail end Charlie, you know, a bloke sitting there just mugged up. But they were a target for these Jerrys with their, what they fight their aircraft, I mean, if they could do it, and the best thing they could do is dive out of it as quick as ever they could, and get down there low there. It's the only protection they had, more or less, you know.
Did you see many damaged planes?
Not really, they used to crash, well, like this one turned upside down in these support trenches. They used to haul them back and then take them away to somewhere else and have them repaired, I suppose, but it was a dodgy job, sort of, wasn't it?
Did you have much contact with the pilots?
Not really. I don't until this particular one, Lieutenant Link, on me. I can never forget him, you know, because it was amazing to me. I mean, he wasn't flying. I mean, when you see a Concorde was doing all these, doing like that, he had what they call a joystick. It was steering in like this.
How did it come about that you flew with him?
Well, I went with a sergeant to repair this wing commander's machine, I put a new valve rod in. And being available, he put me in the sergeant went by transport and he put me in this, thinking I'd like the experience, which I did, really. As I say, he's giving me chocolate at the back there, and he's just flying. But when they used, like now, of course, they come down on the railway, runway like this, and their weight has settled down. But to get a machine like that with like a biplane, they used to go, dive, straighten out, dive, straighten out, dive, and eventually get low that they could come into land. But you know, they could, you know, up and up there. You know, that was the way they had to fly. That was flying in the First World War. But they had some good, Handley Page was a good machine, Bristol Fighter was a good machine, you know. And they had some good, the FE-2B was early in the RE-8s. That was where the cockpit was in front of the machine. It was what they call a pusher. The propeller was at the back, and it pushed them along. That was a biplane. And I mean, these two people, the pilot and the observer, or navigator, was sitting in the front there. But that was FE-2B. That was going back, really, to the first days of aircraft, you know. There wasn't a lot of those about. But I do remember the Bristol Fighter. That was a beautiful machine, that was.
Did you have any problems with supplies of parts or fuel?
No.
Or ammunition?
No, we had a headquarters for repairs. They did normal repairs, such as plugs and things like that, or magnetos, or timing, or things like that. But in the main, if anything serious, it was parked off to Ponta Lodge or some other person that knew what he was doing. And but us on the flights, we are only concerned on just, like a garage attendant, you know, we're just doing, you know, petrol and oil and equipment for pushing them out in the doings and pushing them in the best of the hangars and things like that. So, yeah, it is. So,
you mentioned...
The other part about it was when I finished the war, I got posted to near Doolong,
yes.
And finished up breaking up machines. I did, but yes. I got on the transport there as a driver.
How did that come about?
Well, they would all split in up on the first in, first out sort of this. I mean, in this last war, I mean, I was first in and I was first out. I mean, another fellow and I, we had a whole transport from Hamburg right down to Southend, I think it was. But I mean, a lot of them went to Germany. Some friends of mine got posted to Germany on the Rhine. And I got sent to this particular depot at Candace, near Candace, Fien Villas. And there I was on the transport driving, going to get the mind you, I'm only about 18 and a half. The fellow used to drive the lorry, the big Leyland lorry. He got drunk, so they slung him up and put me on it. So I used to go to Doolong's and get the rations and take the other people, you know, any trips out like that to Brussels and things like that. And I used to take me and put me on the job. And that's it. So
what,
I said,
kind
go
of
down there, go down the station and get a load of wood or a load of coal or something like that, you know. But that was quite an end, and play football.
What kind of vehicles were you?
Oh, yeah, we had a Leyland's mostly.
No, I mean, were you breaking up?
All Fokkers, mostly, I don't remember.
All aircraft, or?
All aircraft, yes. Oh yes, German aircraft. What they were doing with the engines, I don't know. Were they burying them or what, or making them useless? But there's such a lot of them, I said, bringing them back and over happy times there. Mm-hmm. So,
and what was your what was the situation there? I mean,
I was my own governor sort of business. I had quite a happy time. I mean, I used to call out all sorts of this. Sometimes at night, there was one case where one of our airmen was killed by a French soldier, and everybody went packers, and they called me out in the transport. I go down there, and I can't do anything about it. We met them coming back over the crossing. But at the finish, I had to go take this French soldier with a chain attached to his wrist, about 20 foot long, to Doolong's jail. And they got the fellow who, you know, who did the trick, I suppose I met Lang Le Moore or something like that, you know. And, you know, it's sort of doing itself or something. Sort of thing you take in a stride, you adjust yourself, and that's what life is all about, adjustment.
Where were you billeted when you were doing
all? Oh, we had our usual camps, you know, yes. Sort of. Well, we'd all built mostly huts, all in huts, more or less, all built up, you know, and we had a bed and a cupboard to put our gear, and, you know. Oh, it went too bad. I can't say I ever went hungry. May have been cold once or twice. But I was put on one fizzer. Some of them were all late for parade once, and I finished up in the... That was with Force Squad, and that's how I finished up on parade late laughing. I was laughing. He promptly put me on a fizzer. And I had 14 days of emptying the... doing the latrines, emptying the buckets and digging holes and emptying the buckets. That's the only time I got in trouble, really.
It's called a fizzer.
Going oh, well, they've got to put you on a fizzer, yeah. It's on a charge, actually. You know, so...
What do you do for leisure time during the war, generally? You know, when you...
You mean for fun, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing doing, really. The lads used to go down drinking, and I never drank, and... Women didn't interest me, but I say I had football, and I suppose I read things like that. Time passed by. There's always something interesting. We used to have dances. We used to have them. Remember, eventually we got the wax there. They came. We had dances. That's why I learned to dance in the doings there. So, socially, you know, no, it wasn't too bad, really.
You mentioned on here the two medals you won.
Oh, well, I mean, that's campaign yes. medals. They're just all the campaign yes. medals. The other one, only got one in the Second World War because when I went to France, I didn't finish up the requisite time. I don't know, it was 6 or 9 months. But I've got an oak leaf, apparently, goes with mention in despatches to doings, but I never wore them anyway. Never wore them ever.
Did you ever have much contact with the other services during the First War? Did you see much of them?
No, nobody ever contacted us. There's the British Legion. I used to go down playing snooker down there, but I mean, it's not like the RAF sort of us. We never had the RAF association like we've got now. You know, we've got this pretty strong too. They've got homes and all the rest of it.
This is, I mean, in France at the time.
Oh.
Did you see much of many soldiers.
No, not really. No, as I say, we've been limited. We haven't got the transport. I mean, it was miles from nowhere in the middle of fields and the rest of it. If we went out, as I tell you, we went out on these trips to the brothels and places like that. And as I say, I'm most concerned about football, that fiddle and things like that. We used to go out playing football. But as I say, the social, we had plenty of work to do, I might tell you. It wasn't all that easy, you know. The time we'd had enough and had a feed. So there it is. So it's a long, long time ago.
So when did you eventually return home?
Well, I think it was somewhere in the middle of 1919, the time I got demobbed, you know.
Remember how you heard?
Eh?
Do you remember how you heard?
No, I was just told I was due for, I got my ticket to come home.
What did you
That's
feel?
The only time I've ever been out of work. I was 7 months out of work. And I finished. I met a corporal who I was working in one of the squadrons, and he recommended me for a job down in Chiswick. Where I worked in the garage down at Chiswick for some time. And they recommended me to a laundry where I become a general, doing stoking the fires and plumbing and doing brickwork and all the rest, and driving the general dogs body, and driving the Lancia and doing laundry collections up Ealing and all that sort of caper. And there, from there on, I went and did the knowledge. And I was doing the knowledge when I was got called up on this E-reserve, which I received about £10, a bit late.
This was the Second War?
The Second War, yeah, I was on the E-reserve because of my experience in the First. I put some here and they promised £10. And I thought it was a good idea, really. I would like to have gone to camp, you know. And, because it didn't turn out that way. They took the war game first. And, that's it.
So when were you actually called up in the Second War? In 39?
About 6 weeks or 2 months before the war started. And I got posted at 11 FTS Shawbury. The 11 FTS Shawbury was equipped for 500 people and about 1,500 extra airmen pulled up. So they were cooking breakfast at 10 o'clock. Now when I get there, they put me, I was sleeping on the floor, on a canvas, doing it on a lift. Like the window. They didn't know what to do with us. So, they put me on the transport there and sent me out with a fire tender, driving the fire tender. Never told me what I had to do, get on the windward side, anywhere like that. And I was praying nothing of that to these small kites they had there. And it didn't, fortunately. Anyway, I played football. Sports day was Wednesday. I got kicked in the shin and I thought, well, this is no good. So I sent my friend who lives here to send me a saxophone, which he did. So I practiced for about a fortnight and drove everybody mad, I must have done, because I got in the station band, which I've never played in a station band before, or any military music, because I was doing, I've been playing in a dance band. That was, I played in an 8-piece dance band at Wing in Buckinghamshire, and I got 16 bob a night, and I had to travel 12 miles for that. 6 miles there on the bike, 6 miles back. Anyway, at Shawbury, we had a funeral party, and as is the custom, you play the funeral cortege out of the station, the officers salute, and you're supposed to turn around and play on the theory that death has gone by and life begins again. But unfortunately for the leading cornet, we played the dead marching song, so we've turned around and the march back. We play Colonel Bogey, he's playing a different thing altogether. He hasn't gone back to the dotted bar, he's gone straight on. So this cacophony of noise there, of course, the leader, bang. And that was that. So, anyway, I did enjoy myself. We did high school cadets and it was all something new. Mind you, I'm 37 or 38, you know. And then... I say I got posted to Liverpool. I went there a couple of more weeks on it, and I applied for a posting, and I found myself down at 904 Squadron, Balloon Squadron, Clapham. Now, that was during the Blitz on London, which we survived.
What did you do in the Balloon?
I was in charge of six winches, not the balloons themselves, but the forward engines. I was responsible for the upkeep because they had a Ford engine and a winch, you know. So
this was for raising and lowering the.
That's right, and the Indian balloons. But there was a funny instance because we had nearly all the men in the balloon barrage were volunteers from the old days, like a territorial, and they nearly made all the elderly men corporals in charge of a winch. And one down just on the Westminster Bank's ground, we had a corporal, a nice old chap. He would do everything himself. He couldn't rely on anybody else. So they get the order to take down balloons because fighters are out. Instead of in, what happened, I don't know, but they didn't put the winch yet in gear. Instead of going to bringing the 8,000 feet bomb back, he was letting it out all the time. So there's a balloon floating about 8,000 feet of wire flying all the places. The signal that was he got sent away, and he'd been a captain on a ship, on a merchant seaman, or captain. And he came back and visited us. Apparently he went over, he was on his way, my cable laying on a proper ship, cable laying ship, captain. A stuka come along and laid a couple of bombs on the deck. So he was unlucky. He came back, oh dear, I thought it was, I don't know. Well, that was it. So,
did you have to have special training for barrage balloon?
Well, if you were on the balloons, yeah, it was just a matter of letting them up and letting them down. You got the order. But they spent most of their time polishing it up. So one night I'm in the Jewish hospital next door. It was in Nightingale Lane. I'm playing in the band. Somebody come, hurry up, come on, you've got to go to the balloon barrage up in Tooting. They got in trouble up there. Apparently, what they'd done, they'd polished up the sparking place and they'd polished all over it. When they started it up, it electrified all the whole body and nobody could get on it. I used my common sense. What they did, I turned the petrol off. That stopped it. Yeah. And that's what had happened to them. They just, you know, overdone it. Cool, dear, no, dear.
How long would the barrage balloon stay?
Well, until the danger was over. They only put it up when they took them down when our fighters were around. When the jury was over, they used to let them up as a deterrent, more or less. Mm. They were effective up to the doings there. But they did come unstuck. There was one once I went out to where it had laid its truck at Clapham Junction Station. All the wire had sort of gone across the main road, electrified everything, within distance, all those sort of things happened. Apparently had been shot down or something, you know. But we had some marvellous times there, dances and things like that. We used to go out and old cricket, and we had a fine cricket time. We had a international as a referee and all the rest of it. You know, happy days they were.
You said this was at the height of the Blitz.
This is the height of the Blitz. Yes, yes.
What, do you remember a particular incident during that time?
Well, there was one instance that concerned me. That was we was in a common hall. Actually, it was an previous to us taking over, it was an LCC home of some sort. They had a lovely billiard table. We used to play snooker there. But there was a flight side, a right windy geezer. He was big and fat. He used to come in. We didn't say anything about it. He wasn't supposed to be in. But I'm going to try and chop a ball over another one, and suddenly the biggest bang you've ever heard in your life, and I'm transfixed like this. He's shot under the table with the others. I can't get under there, there's no room. So I don't know whether the next one's going to fall on me. But it was okay, it went over, rushed outside, and they'd gone that away down Nightingale Lane with these lights all dropping down, chandelier lights. I had a laugh, honestly, the situation I found there. And the other one, I was out at Forest up in, where was it, Streatham, that's right, another one of our squads, and I'm laying in a place, I was billeting a room, where at the bottom was only about a foot of brickwork. The rest was all glass. It was a billiard room doing to a big jeweler's. So they said to me, he said, if you're sitting there, he said, what I should do, one of them, I should get under the bed and put the ground sheet over the bed like that, and they'll stop me doing that, which I did. I thought it was a good idea. So I get underneath, there's a sudden bang, and I put my head out like that, expect as I'd lay that way towards the doings, I can't feel anything. And I thought to myself, I'm on the way, you know, sort of, and it's, what's it all about? Because I didn't realise I'd turn round. I'd turn round in bed, because when I turn around, so, honestly, but there it is. I think the sort of feelings, you know, you're feeling, you know, where am I, sort of, but it's, you know. So.
Did you stay with that 904?
Yes, I was there about a year or so, I think, you know.
And then?
It's a bit dodgy. And then, where did I go for 904 squadron?
RAF Wing, Buckinghamshire.
Oh, Wing, Buckinghamshire, yes. Well, I didn't stop there long either, I don't know why. We were doing just hanging about, you know, things.
Yes.
Things, and one or two aeroplanes up there. There's nothing specific. As I say, then when I went to posted to do is that's where my career really took off. The Brunting thought I was there 3 years.
And what was and your responsibility there?
Well, I had 22 men and 165 vehicles on the charge. First I was made corporal, then sergeant, then acting flight sergeant.
What kind of vehicles?
Oh, we had all sorts, transport, you know, all sorts of transport, what name lifters, port lifters and, you know, all sorts of petrol lorries and terrific size, some of them, you know. We had always responsible, and dumpers, they were mostly.
What kind of base was Bruntingthorpe?
Oh, it was a terrific, brand new sort of service, almost non-existent, really. It was only a couple of cottages. But it was not far from Leicester, about 10 miles from Leicester.
And what was the base used for, mainly?
Oh, for flying, oh yes, it was an OTU actually. Although they did send Wellingtons on one big mission, but usually mostly Wellingtons. It was a, you know, sort of, they did go on a trip and go out training. And I remember one morning I was going out to wash and dress and there was such a crash and a pall of smoke. And I found out afterwards the people that I knew. Really, because they used to mend their bikes. Well, they haven't bloke down. An Australian crew, they'd gone out to do what they called a long-distance run. They used to go out into the sea, and they were trained to come home on one engine. That was the training. But they, as they were due to go home, they got the kit packed. And they've tried to make it. And as I got to land on this one engine, it just blew up. So the next thing I was orderly sergeant, I get the move to go round immediately. I gave me the names, and my faith in human nature failed me to get hold of their bikes. Otherwise, some of the others, the air crew, would knock them off, you know, all the sort of details and get all their gear together before, you know. So, I don't know. So what do you expect? Their life expectancy was sort of, they got through 6 months, 8 months. Most of them were tail end Charlies. Most of them were air gunners, you know, the stripes, lovely stripes. But they were really in group five, which is the lowest grade. And I mean, they used to clear the snow off the runways. I mean, as I say, once they got in that cockpit or at the back there, you know, they're liable to be shot all over the place. Although one hut I stopped in, at Bruntingthorpe, we had one fella, he went and dropped about 4,000 feet. He was an observer, all his gear and maps went up in the air. He finished up with a furrow right across his doing like that, and he got away with it. There was another fella there, was a tail end Charlie. He'd done 22 missions, never even saw a German aeroplane. Just the luck of the gods, another one go out there and just shot down just like that.
So you mixed quite a lot with gunners and...
Yes, and well, they're most in the huts there, you know. You've got them here. Well, I can't think of the bloke that... I don't know where he is, actually. Yes, they'd all done there. You see, they've got the little one badge on. The observer badge, one yes. Wing. They're all... you know, tail end, what they call tail end Charlie, you know, the bloke that sat in the back with a machine gun. And, you know, There's hardly any, no pilots there. They're all no good boats. We're playing comms and all this sort of caper there.
Were they fully aware of what they were like?
Well, they're very relieved, weren't they? Because very seldom they went on another trip. Some of them did. But some of them got away with it. You know, sort of, there was no luck at all. Jerry happened to see them, bang, bang, bang. They have no chance to get out because they're all strapped in, sort of, in this.
Did you get to know many personally?
Well, I did one or two of them, yes. They used to come to me and have their bikes repaired. I'd get a bloke to fix them up with their bikes and all that. You know, yes, it was interesting. As a matter of fact, I had to work harder than anybody else. I was responsible. I had to get there at 4 or 8 o'clock. And I had to stop there at 6 o'clock before the night fitter come on duty. You know, for the others gave them a scarboring off sort of minutes. So I enjoyed the job. And, you know, I've got no regrets. In fact, some of them had some very good experiences.
Well, how long did you continue to do that?
Well, I was 3 years there when I went there. And yes. I took over 3 years. Because I had to order things and order engines and have them put